any one way of preaching.
Yeah, I think we'd all be in agreement with that, wouldn't we?
Which is why I'm puzzled about the status of your model. It seems to me to suggest that you suppose that there is one way.
I think it originated just because of the problem that we had in discussing the work that came in, because it was in fact work. It wasn't just a concept, an idea, and work. It was in fact physical work that came in. And the work itself didn't seem to generate amongst the people that were there intense discussion at all. And so we thought that if maybe some structure was there which initiated some kind of discussion, there were certain points that we moved through in discussion with that time and sort, then maybe more could be excavated from the work. And it seems to me that that's what the relevance of the model is. I don't know if that's what other people feel. To me, that it came out.
But what does this model rule out? I mean, one way of examining an object that's brought into attention, for instance, is chemically. You could run a complete chemical analysis of it, of the nature of the paper that it becomes, and so on. You wouldn't want to bother doing that, would you? Mm-hmm. Quite obviously. Well, to start to ask why not, then it seems to me you're on the way. I mean, why is it inappropriate to analyse a work of art chemically?
Because
and you're on the way toward developing a concept of art. So you've got some things in your model, psychological, sociological.
I've tried not to rule out anything.
You haven't got to keep.
So I would say that the chemical was possible, especially if you're dealing with a photograph. You might want to know whether it was a silver process or some other process.
That has come into discussions in the past.
I can't conceive of how you could offer something that was not possible to talk about. I wouldn't want to rule anything out. And maybe that's its most dangerous kind of assumption.
But if you're not ruling out any strategy, any mode of inquiry into presented objects, then what function is the model serving? Is it just to remind one that one can introduce any consideration whatsoever?
That's a good argument.
That's sort of
a very good argument. That's what I'm afraid of. Mm-hmm. And that it is a reminder rather than a structure that there is the historical, the social, the psychological, that these are possibilities within the framework of doing things in an art-related activity. And
Like what Judy said, it relates back to that. It relates back to the thing that we talked about responsibility, about bringing a concept in that can actually be talked about, rather than a concept that is very difficult for the group to understand. So we spend a long time trying to come round to establishing the person what idea they had to bring the concept in the first place and where it actually links.
Yes, but what we were discussing at this point was these viewpoints.
But why would the motivation be so important? I mean, suppose someone brings in a dead rat for the examination, and the motivation is to make some kind of spectacle of oneself, assertiveness. So what? You might draw attention to that casually, as it were, in passing. We're just putting on a bit of a turn here in that end. And then having said that, it's still necessary, isn't it, to examine the object, the motivation of the object's producer is only mildly and incidentally interesting. It certainly isn't binding on the interpretation of things as a work of art.
If you were bringing something to a group that you knew as a group to discuss some point that you were trying to actually establish yourself a greater clarity in, the starting point for bringing it in, so the group could actually maybe get a hold of the issue straight away without going through a lot of the preliminary establishment. Could be by finding a situation in relationship to this grid that could be laid over, or any the model seems to be a difficult word.
To ask the person why they brought this in.
Well, for the person to establish it for themselves to begin with, where it relates to this, to the situation of being able to be talked about, where it fits in to begin with, so people would start off at the place that you start from.
Yeah, well, this could be helpful. Of course, people very often do know what they're doing, why they're doing it, but are you suggesting that the producer's view is in some way binding?
I'm saying it's hard often in a lot of the work that has been brought in has been on a nature, you know, on a whole very difficult to actually go straight into the person and talk about the work without spending a long time talking around the work, because we have no footing to understand where it relates to the person, how it relates to the environment, how it relates to the all the issues that we've tried to lay down. And it's that re-establishment of those sort of ideas every time.
So in the third part we talked about commonality of values. It's relevancy to the inquiry model. Is it relevant to put into discussion?
Mm-hmm.
So I think to we'll understand one another.
Suggests in the first part as a precondition fruitful discussion that there must already be a commonality of values. But in that case, why would it be worth discussing? Surely not.
Well, since then, I gather, so we all got together originally to interact and help one another to clarify what we were doing, cross-reference ideas.
That's not the way it's stated at any rate. It says that there has to be enough differences of opinion, I think, to offer a divergence of view, but there has to be some sense of common. I have to find it in here wherever it is.
Well, how
if the range is too great, the levels of conceptualization will very likely be too far apart to enable the group to relate productively. But group members should possess a common level of sophistication and orientation toward the process of investigation and analysis. So the commonality is really towards the process, but with divergences of view, you've got to have them.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, everybody's repeating what the other one says.
It's just a matter of shared values, except in respect of that single...
In respect to analysis.
...of the desirability of rational discussion.
I think that people would want meaning, or that they would come to the group expecting meaning was involved in a translation of something going through the model. That what they expected was that life would be meaningful rather than nonsense. And maybe that's the commonality.
It must be difficult with Donald with it, not knowing the sort of conversations previously that we've been having that may be led to this situation as well.
Well, I'm just interested in his argument that perhaps the model is an explanation of the obvious, that it is redundant to say that you can discuss something from a number of different viewpoints. However, I don't think that's what a definition of art proposes at the moment. It says that there is a special domain that art occupies, and the relevancy of discussion must center on art history, art theory, and on certain things that have become particular and, you know, relevant to art itself. And that what we're trying to do is open up the bottom, just right out the bottom, so that it involves a holistic approach to art and can involve discussion on from a number of different viewpoints. And I think that is its kind of contentious statement, if anything else. It may be obvious to us here, you know, that this is clearly the case, that art can be discussed from God knows how many different viewpoints, but it's certainly not obvious to a larger art audience. I don't think so. At least here in Perth, it seems to me clear that there's a certain domain that you can occupy yourself with and everything else is not to be considered.
How do you handle the traditional arguments, deriving from Kant's put up with the simplicity of art. I mean the argument that if you say about this painting that it's that it has certain political significance, what you say may well be true, it may well have that political significance, but your comment treats it as a political artifact, and of course at least it does, that's true, and therefore because it treats it as a political artifact, does not treat it as an artistic artifact.
Because
whatever an artistic artifact may be, it is not a political object, it is something else.
Because it must have this element of disinterest, that its primary production is from a disinterested point of view.
Well, you get disinterestedness by ruling out everything.
Mm.
See? To appraise the thing from a didactic point of view, from a political point of view, from a religious point of view, from a whatever, is in each case to attribute a particular institutional interest that is strictly irrelevant to the appreciation of the thing as a work of art.
Mm-hmm.
The only proper appreciation of the object qua work of art is a disinterested appreciation, that is, seeing it as without meaning, without significance, not immoral, unmoral, amoral, and so on.
Well, I don't know how other people would come to terms with that, but I see it as a being oversimplified in that descriptive sense. That the sense of disinterest comes at all points along the line, and the production of art is actually a production involving analysis, thought, and then disinterest, and then a spark of something that comes from this disinterest. I don't know exactly where, and I'm not really interested in where, except it's a computer synthesis inside our heads or some person's head. Something happens there that fires all the way across. I suppose that you could eventually discover why, where, and how. But that the production of art isn't simply disinterest. There's thought, emotion, then periods of nothingness, and then an analysis that comes from seeing something and starting to put it back into together. So I think that the idea that art is primarily a production of objects from a disinterested point of view is an oversimplification, and it makes artists non-thinkers.
It's not a theory about production, it's a theory about appreciation.
Kant
doesn't offer any theory about production.
I was just speaking from a production point of view or a thinking point of view.
The theory of appreciation is that to appreciate a work of art as art just is to appreciate it disinterestedly.
It seems like a real...
If you have any interest in the Kantian or early 18th century sense of disinterestedness, if you have any interest in the object, if you appreciate it as a likeness of your grandmother or as an object that's likely to appreciate in value or as an object that's likely to persuade people to vote Labour or etc., you are in the act of doing that. Not appreciating it as an artwork, but as something else, as an instrument of some other kind. Of course, it may very well be an instrument of some other kind. What you say about it is not false, not irrelevant. It's simply not art appreciation. This is the theory of art that's dominated the tradition for the last 200 years.
It's been 10 years since I read Kant. Except when you use the term, because I've read it in some things you've written, your use of the word disinterest. And it's only overtone of strangeness, is this ability to say that it doesn't matter what you apply to the work of art. Or if it's applied at all, and that you probably should best be just standing there in this kind of empty space of not applying any point of view. And I don't know what the activity would be, because I'm not used to that. I expect something more tangible from experiencing the world. And what do you think, Jeff?
It sounds a bit too simple to me. It's like something I went through as a kid.
Just living through.
No, but I was sort of born in that ability to represent the world by creating images. And I saw something, I liked it, I didn't know why I liked it, I wanted to draw it, paint it, make it.
Yes. Well, Kant would say, or Kantian would say, that that is a representation of interest. You would have a topographical interest.
But after all,
or sentimental interest, not an artistic interest.
But after all, that activity becomes meaningless. Because it just becomes repetitive after all. You have the skill to do it, but that's all it is. It's just the ability to manipulate media to produce an image that looks like something.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about representation, don't you?
Yeah, well, that's really what we're talking about.
I have my own answer to this problem. I don't believe in the account of art. And obviously neither do you.
Oh, it's a Swiss cheese. Because it leaves us out. If we feel some sense of dismay at trying to confront it, well, then we've got to deal with it, because it doesn't fit our model of the 20th century. It doesn't seem to work any longer. It's interesting from a historical viewpoint.
See, the contradiction with me is I still teach people how to do that, because that's what they want to do, and it's important for them to be able to do that. So I'm not going to deny them the ability or want to do that. So because I've been through it and I understand the skills and I know how to convey the skills and try to develop an individual how to get their own expression across in a situation.
But you are talking about skill now, Jeff.
But basically,
and
that's
I think
what
Donald's talking about is art.
But that's what, to me, that's what art is. It's skill.
So if
it's that ability.
What I felt,
that's the definition of the word.
What I felt like definition, while you're on your
topic, it's the definition.
Is that if you create a word, that's the answer to the word, and then you look at a piece of work and that charges you up to recreate another piece of work, and so on and so on, and so the cycle goes. And you never stop to question whether it's art, and maybe it isn't art, what you're producing.
Just private advice.
Oh. So what I felt was
that it turned you on.
That all I was doing when I was when you're in that cycle was just filling in time. And there must be some other way of looking at the process or finding something of even by looking backwards or looking at what we have now to try and find some way of producing something that demanded some sort of creative act rather than just recreation all the time about what we already had.
Well, this is available in other spheres, isn't it? If you want to find minerals, you can go and learn how to do that. If you want to make meals, you can go and learn how to do that. If you want to dye fabrics, you can go and learn how to do that. If you want to make boats, and so on. Your problem seems to be that you want to learn how to make art.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems not to be anywhere where people can really convince you that they can teach you to do this.
I want to make art. I wanted to try and what I felt was what I wasn't doing was actually creating anything from any source.
You have the idea that art is something that you can try to do. So how do you try to do it? What is it you're trying to do?
It's sort of like redirecting your perceptual abilities.
I suppose I feel it is something that you want to. You sense something, you understand something, and you want to try and, again, communicate that understanding or that sense of something to somebody else.
That sense of what?
or whatever it is that you're...
You've got to sharpen it up before you do anything.
Right.
You've got to say something like, I want to put on paper or on canvas an objective, correlative of my state of inner being.
Let's say I'm excited by the state of flux in the landscape, so therefore I want to now try and communicate that.
State of flux?
Well, look, it's always changing. So, I don't know, I'm not very good at that.
But you've certainly got to set yourself an objective.
Right.
So if you're going to deliberately do something.
Right.
You can't deliberately do... You don't know what.
No.
You can only deliberately do things for which you can, in principle anyway, state an objective.
So, what
either
I
a formal or a functional objective.
When
I'm going to draw a perfect circle freehand, or I'm going to try and draw something the colour of which is...
What I felt I was doing after a while wasn't actually saying anything, but just producing work after work, but no apparent reason at all.
Yeah.
It was about a vague idea that just said, well, I really like that, and I see the problems in that, and then I change it and produce another one that is divorced of those problems. But again, it had other problems, but I never thought about it enough, because I've been caught up in the way of teaching that says produce.
When you look at it like that, it just looks crazy. Yeah.
What I tried to do was...
To be deliberately doing nothing.
Right.
So we get, it's sort of like becoming idealistic when you talk this way, going back to what I mean by the socialist thing, that you're trying to use your skill, your perceptual ability, to produce whatever in the art context that may be helpful to improve the lot of mankind, make them more aware.
Well, that looks to me fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
If you're clear about your political objectives, where you want to expose the rapacity and evil of the capitalists, forward the ambitions, rightful aspirations of the working class and so on, and you're a dab hand at drawing, then you go and draw pictures of evil-looking capitalists. The point I'm making is that as soon as you're clear about what it is you want to do and what skills you have, you just get on with it. You don't have a problem.
Yeah, no, the second point there is...
You certainly don't have a problem about art.
If you feel within yourself the conventional forms of art aren't doing the job, you start looking for another way of doing it. Like, have you given up the painting won't do it for you? Sculpture's not doing it. The printmaking's not doing it. Photography's not doing it.
That's right. The conventional ways of making art in the commons aren't doing the job.
Aren't doing the job. So you start to look...
I suggest to you that the reason they're not isn't, pragmatic or empirical. It isn't that they're not yet good enough at it or haven't quite found the way. The reason it can't be done is a quite simple logical reason. It cannot be done in principle, since that's rather difficult. It can't be done because art cannot be made.
Hit that one, but I'm not giving up. I'm optimistic that it may be a way.
You can only make things for which you can, as it were, form the plan.
Yeah.
You know what you're doing. You can't know what you're doing. For art is the kind of thing that can only occur by accident. Trying to get the right one. What does that mean, trying to get the right one? All you can do is buy a lottery ticket. That is something that you know how to do. You can count the money and get it right, give it to the appropriate person, receive the ticket and put it in a safe place and so on. That's a skill that you can handle. Getting the right tickets, you can't do.
Mm. If I set up the situation which I talked about a little while ago, quite a long time ago, was to try and explain what I was doing, was to try and say that you were like a child looking into an empty toy box. You had time to play.
It's a nice metaphor, but it is misleading. The reason you can't explain what you're doing function as an artist is because you aren't doing it.
I'm just in total disagreement with this. You just really aggravate it. Because I know examples of works of art that occurred because the person knew that they were doing them. And that I know that art isn't dependent on this idea of not knowing what you're doing or coming from some place that's indefinable. I'm sorry.
You can know what you're doing when it's a skill that you're exercising.
You're exercising a lot of skills.
Yeah.
You have a conception in your mind of what you'd like to achieve.
Yeah.
You're working towards that conception. You may achieve various degrees on the way towards it. You may fail, you may fall short of it. But it involves a lot of processes that are skill-oriented, that are not skill-oriented, that are knowing and not knowing together. That it's a holistic approach towards achieving something. And I don't see how you can maintain that it is solely resultant from this thing
of
not knowing.
The bits that you do on purpose, you do on purpose. And the bits that are accidents.
And don't they both contribute?
The best you can do, if you want to get lucky, is to do something that you can do. Paint a picture, for example, the Maranpichi sunset. You know how to do that. And hope that in the process of doing that, you get lucky.
And suppose
that, that something you didn't mean to do will happen.
Suppose you do something that you can't do, and you do it wrong. And it turns out contributing towards what it is you want to do.
Yes, that's fine. That's
it's an accident again.
Yeah.
But it's a deliberate activity, isn't it? I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to get into this area that I know nothing about.
In a very thin sense, if you want to get lucky, you've got to do something. Certainly, total inactivity will frustrate serendipity. Luck.
So is this,
if you just lie down in cataleptic trance, you're not going to get lucky.
So is this like the 10%?
You're going to buy a lottery
ticket. Is this like the 10% thing? Where we have a person who's working and they produce a piece.
It's not 10%, it's no percentage.
Oh, I just, no.
Can I just introduce the word here that I think is coming to the conversation with the word chance?
Yes, chance.
Well, that's.
So,
that's debatable.
I'll give you an example from scientific innovation. You know, Kekule's concern about some problems in organic chemistry, in particular the structure of benzene. And he wanted to model that structure and was not able to. He did not know how to model the structure of benzene. And he played around developing models more or less at random. And as a chance, the model that was successful was one that came to him quite accidentally while dreaming, or daydreaming. He had this daydream of a serpent biting its own tail. And as soon as he formed that image, he deliberately formed in his mind the image of a serpent biting its own tail, he recognized that image as a model the benzene ring, six carbon atoms linking in a circle.
At what point was the accident? At what point did the accident occur? And how can you define it as an accident unless it's just an interpretation that you're putting on to this whole intellectual process?
That model was deliberately made as a model or picture, if you like, of a snake biting its tail.
Mm-hmm.
It was not made as a model of the benzene ring, because he didn't know how to do that. But he did recognize, when he made one model deliberately of the snake, that by accident he had made the required model.
Okay, well, you're talking about an incredibly complex process, this thinking process that involves dreaming and waking.
Right. Suppose
you're working on
an example from the literature. It's very obvious.
You're obsessed with this, working on this problem. And what's occurring in dreams are going to link up and become related to what's occurring as conscious activity. And how do you separate and define, say, all those dreams are accidents, and it just happened that I stumbled on this perfect model, when I've been obsessed and involved with the workings, and God knows what's going on in my head, is that going to be accident, or is that going to be part of this deliberate activity of approaching a model, whether it's dream or waking? Why is dream suddenly accident?
What we need is a clearer sense of concept of action, of what it is to act, to make, or to do something.
Holistic one that's got to include a lot of things, because we got a complex brain here we're working with.
Well, it's the logic of the concept I'm concerned with. There are some events in which we're implicated that are not action. If someone gives us a push, for instance, as we're walking along, then we might knock over a shelf full of ornaments. That was not an action. That was a bodily movement. And we can explain the bodily movement in terms of somebody else's push. The difference between action and bodily movements, both of them have consequences, of course. Knocking over a shelf full of ornaments is a pretty dire consequence of a bodily movement, as significant in the world as an action, but nevertheless logically different. And the difference, surely, is this, that actions are formed, very roughly, under a prescription, known to, in principle, available from the actor. A person who acts, as contrasted with a person who merely goes through bodily movements, a person who acts is a person who is capable, in principle, of saying what he's doing before or while he does it. Capable in principle, or not necessarily in practice. I take it that animals deliberately act. I mean, they deliberately chase balls and throw them. They deliberately walk over to their food bowl in order to eat it. And they couldn't tell you that they are, what they are now doing is chasing the ball. Nevertheless, they have, as it were, the model of the subsequent state of affairs in the world in mind. It is under the guidance of that model that they go through these motions, pursuing a wall, eating the food. Makes it appropriate to say that what has just occurred is an action and not merely a bodily movement or reflex, something mechanically caused a push.
Doesn't that require you to say that it was willful, that it was deliberate?
Well, if you like, willful. The point is that actions are beforehand or during the course of their execution internally modeled. That is what makes them actions. Now, if you can internally model what you're about to achieve, then the process subsequent to the internal modeling is a process of skill, craftsmanship, or design. It's an intervention in the world such that the world is transformed so as to conform with the model. What was merely possible becomes actual. I model the possibility of my hand rising, and I change the world in such a way that this model going before the action becomes actual, the possible becomes actual. If someone took my wrist and did that, that would not have been the action of raising my hand. This action, raising my hand, because I do it voluntarily under the model. And this is everything I do of that kind is a skill. Skills of voluntary action, skills of riding bicycles, and driving motor cars, and juggling, and talking, and so on, all the things we do, are characteristically teachable and learnable. Characteristically, they're procedures at which people get better with practice. This is characteristic of skills, to a certain limit in the range. achievable expertise, that there are differences in individual attitudes for skills, some people are better than others. Nevertheless, in general, skills are teachable and learnable when you get to practice. Inventing, trying to create an invention that's involved in scientific discovery and in art, is not teachable and learnable, and it isn't something which people get better than practice.
Did Cezanne produce art?
A couple.
Well, I don't want to answer that.
But to get, I was thinking about Alan's point, how Alan felt in your analysis previous to the last. And, I mean, Alan said that he felt that he rejected that theory of yours. And then I just, when you said that what art isn't produced, it happens, or what was the one you said?
Well, I've been giving an account of the concept of action, and I would now argue that the concept of action is appropriately analysed, understood, comprehended, interpreted in terms of notions of skill and development. Skill of stating objectives, of achieving objectives, of expertise, and so on. And I suggest that there is something else that occurs in the world that is as important as skill, may even be more important, that is the source of all innovation, of all origination, of all development, that has nothing whatsoever to do with skill, that isn't teachable and learnable, of which people don't improve the practice, that can't be prefigured in the act of execution, because if one could prefigure it, if one could model the process before doing it, one can, in a sense, already
right.
do it.
With
that, you've already done it.
Right.
There would be no possibility of innovation, of change, of progress, if it were not that there are unskilled events of significance. And these are the ones that I collect under the concept of art, which I hold to be significantly different from craft and design.
But what the problems, as I think, that you can up to a point lay the situation open for somebody to experience the potential of being more creative than others. You can put somebody in a situation all the time where they're trying to achieve something like they're trying to lottery system put out, which is better than not if they want to make some money.
Well, I suggest no use trying to win the lottery.
Yeah, I would say so.
Just
I would say
go and skillfully buy tickets.
But what I'm saying is that the situation is that you often hear the diagnosis when somebody looks at a work of art or something, that there is this certain something that we cannot explain that's inherent in the work of art. And the reason I mention 10% is because they often say, well, you know, the artist does that 90% labour and 10% of it is that spark that doesn't always happen, that's just in that one, which separates that one out from the rest.
Yeah.
And I think to some extent that's too easy for us.
I don't think there's any 10% there. The trouble with some kinds of skills of painting, for instance, and making installations and so on, things like Gentle's piece, the difficulty in approaching, comprehending, analysing things like that is that it's very unclear just what skill is being exercised. And in fact, there are probably half a dozen. It's not at all obvious whether it is expressing healing or revealing something about the nature of the world, or making symbols about the bush, or performing some feat of social engineering, persuading people, or etc. etc. Characteristically, so-called artistic, conventional so-called artistic skills are not skills, merely because it is unclear what skill they are. And as a matter of fact, they're a very curiously assorted ragbag of skills of a great variety of kinds. But they're still skills, it's just they're confused.
If there is this thing called, whether I got it right or wrong, the thing called chance, and that's what creates the art, isn't it then trying to find out if it is chance? where that chance happens, and if it is totally random, or if there is some signal to it, and is it more responsibility to try and make, instead of it being some mystical thing, actually try and make it so that you can...
Well, I'm trying to demystify it.
Yeah, when I was thinking about that, the 10%, the reason I said it like that, is because what you would try and do if you realise that there was this mystical thing called 10% in some works of art, you would try and make yourself make it 100%, rather than go on working on the idea that by producing images all the time, the chance there might be a 10% in it, you'd actually try and analyse what the 10% is. That's not waste your time when anyone is creating other things, because then by analysing...
You can't do what you can't do. You can only do what you can do.
We mentioned that before. There might be two different ways of doing it.
Maybe a thousand ways.
Yeah. No, but I mean, take the painting.
You do what you can do, and sometimes in doing what you can do, you discover to your astonishment something else has happened, and now you can do that.
Can I illustrate two examples here with the chance thing? That, you've got the artist on one hand who has certain skills, certain understandings of media, and just experiments, hoping that he'll get a result or she'll get a result.
Yeah.
And often then that artist has to be able to recognise
it. Maybe advantageous to mess about and experiments.
Yeah,
but
it can't just continue. There's that one
you might do equally well just looking around the world, not making things, but finding it intense.
Can I just illustrate the other one? Because the first artist arrives at the result randomly like that.
Yeah.
But the artist has to be able to recognise this particular painting has achieved a certain result.
Yeah.
Then the other artist doesn't work that way. The other artist works from a conceptual point of view, has ideas, works them out on paper, in a very sort of intellectual process before they arrive at the product.
I can't see why you're calling this person an artist.
Well, I see that person is producing a similar result that fits into the art context, but they've used a different process to achieve the result. A very deliberate process, a very worked out process, an analytical process,
mm-hmm.
before they've achieved, they said, this is what I'm going to do now, because I've worked out all the problems, but the other artist has worked the other one. So one person really isn't working, I feel, from a chance situation.
I'm not quite following this.
The second
there's obviously a difference between the situation of the person who says, I will now draw a tree with five branches and three leaves on the end of each branch. And I shall think all the leaves meridian agree. That's what you mean by he's a conceptual sort of person who says this to himself. And then he does that. He draws a tree with five branches and three leaves. And
well, you can work from
so that. So is this a sort of parody of the conceiver in advance, as contrasted with the artist who just approaches canvas or a piece of paper with a massive colour and just does that? Well, of course there's a difference.
Yeah.
Now, what are we going to make of this difference?
Well, I'd say the second artist, the one conceiver, would be attempting to eliminate chance, but it's a deliberate action. They're conscious of what they're doing.
The first artist, the conceiver,
is
eliminating chance.
Well, the first artist, the person who attacks the canvas.
Yes.
That's the first artist. The second artist, right?
In this tiny way.
Yeah.
No, of course not.
It's not. Of course not. Right.
Yeah. Of course, the tiny-minded conceptualizer with the tree with seven branches and three leaves on each branch and so on is not eliminating chance. Because when all of that is done, suddenly, inspiration, he says, or somebody says, that's a model of the universe. You thought you were just drawing a tree, but in fact, this shows how the galaxies are brachiated, and what is the relation between heaven and earth, and hell and damnation, and so on.
If that's not the artist's...
The artist didn't mean to do that.
No, but that's... Well,
you can't mean to invent something.
That assessment would throw everything wide open.
Yes,
because an artist is just a piece of work, but you get 10,000 different reactions to it.
That's right, sure. Yeah. So that's now, what we're looking for is the ones that stick. We're looking,
we get to the meaningful ones.
Radically new models of the world.
Are they the ones that stick? Or is it the ones that are made to fit in people's consciousness?
Well, it depends whether you're a nominalist or a realist.
Oh, gotcha.
If you're a nominalist, you say that any new model will do as long as you can sell it.
Well, can we
sufficient people? If you're a realist, you say no, and the nature of the real world is such that operating with this model will give you a better grasp.
Well, if we've achieved the model that produced the work that everybody agrees with, that the 10,000 people all have the exact communication, exact perception of it, do you feel that's achievable? Or doesn't it fit in with what that is? Something else again.
What would be an example? The invention of the model of homo universalis, the human being in the square and the circle. This is the paradigm, the Renaissance invention of the conception of man as having this extraordinary dual nature, such that he stands in relation equally to earth and heaven as a biological creature engaged in earth, which is symbolized in traditional medieval way as the square, but also who is in touch with heaven by virtue of the power of symbolization, the power of understanding, who shares in the nature of God and the nature of the Creator, so that these two universes of the natural and supernatural are reconciled through the human. This is a conception of how the world is that was at that time new, a new conception, the nature of the universe and the role of mankind in the universe. And this was a model. This model initiated this conception. It turned out to be immensely popular, of course. It was a very potent model, and all post-Renaissance humanism was founded on this model. Are you asking whether this model, the proper value of this model resides in the fact that it has been popular and influential, irrespective of its truth, or whether it ultimately resides in its being true? And if it turns out that the universe isn't like that, but there isn't, so to speak, even metaphorically, a heaven and an earth and a human reconciler of the two, then this would have been an interesting, potent, and influential model, but not a true model, and therefore would have to be discarded. That's the sort of picture you've got.
Yeah, I think that's